from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me on Startup Report today is Zach Hatriff from Anchor.
Yes, sir.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Excited. We're setting sail.
That's right.
I'll make some jokes.
Ready to set sail. That's right. How many are we going to get in today? We'll do a montage at the end.
So I think people think building a startup is hard, but at this point, hearing the boat jokes harder than the actual startup?
I get made fun of a little bit more for my sporting analogies. So okay. we'll work some of those in. But absolutely. So
yeah. Cool. So this is your second startup now in the boating space, and not something that was part of the trajectory of your upbringing, but something that an event sort of pushed you down this trajectory.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit how that happened?
Sure. So I joke and say I started with a white belt in boating. I ended up with a black belt in Coast Guard regulation. but I started this business after my best friend was actually killed in a drunk boating accident at Lake of the Ozarks. So we're in Florida now. Right. Not everybody's familiar with Lake of the Ozarks. It's the show is based off of it with Jason Bateman. So my best friend was in Party Cove just doing what you do on a boat and having a good time. And of course, he was having some drinks and another boater was too. He got on a jet ski and before noon, you know, was already killed in a direct impact accident. So that really, really, when you're in college, you know, friends are everything at that time. Sure. And it was a huge impact to me watching sort of the process with which that affects people's lives. So I didn't think of the business right then and there. I waited a year and a half to actually go back to the lake, a year and a half, 2 years even. First time I returned back to the Lake of the Ozarks, of course, the first place we go with a different group of friends is Party Cove.
Right.
And just looking around, I knew that something needed to be done. We actually showed up at the boat rental company.
Right.
Asked them if we could hire a sober skipper or a sober captain, not really knowing if that was something that was offered. And they kind of laughed and said no.
Right.
And as that happens, a bunch of cars are showing up. Everybody's pulling coolers out. And I said, this is a major problem we have here. Everybody here, I know all these people, you know, I know what they're going out to do.
Right.
So I wanted to start just a simple solution where you could call our service and we would dispatch a sober driver for you.
So was your initial inclination? I mean, obviously at that inflection point, there's a couple different ways you can go for it.
Sure.
You can go for legislation and lobbying. You can go for a nonprofit. You can go for, you know, anything. Sure. And so when made the business the one that you chose?
Well, again, we used a sober driver that day. We actually paid our buddy to do it. So the idea just was born out of that. It started to evolve though, as we, you know, our first summer, we only had 2 to 3 captains helping us. It was really kind of philanthropic more than entrepreneurial. And then the calls started rolling in and the business organically just got bigger. This is before Facebook was making you pay to play so much. So you could build a following really quick and you could actually message your following really fast. So we got thousands of likes and all of a sudden we're pushing this product out. Private boat owners are starting to use it. The boat rental companies are starting to use it. We went from 2 to 20 to 30 and 40 really, really fast.
That's great.
And so we felt really good about ourselves. And at the same time, we're making a good margin, marking up and having, it was really a captain staffing company.
Sure.
So a lot of Saturdays dedicated to that.
That's all good startups. And then, you know, were you entrepreneurial in general at that point? It was natural to start your own thing?
Natural, I think. Yes. And you know, my dad's an entrepreneur. So my dad came out from overseas. He's from Algeria and came over as a top 500 mathematics student and got a scholarship. Boston University comes over, is working in IT world. Was a COBOL developer, if that tells you anything, and a director of a department. And ends up quitting that job for his passion of soccer and wants to help do jerseys and kits for teams and stuff like that. So my dad owns a very large silkscreen and embroidery operation now, but not anything. So yeah, dad's got the
one way or another, you were starting a business.
Yeah, I worked in the shop. So we did everything from hanging up the shirts to putting up the walls to running the screens and actually the ink and the chemicals and the whole nine yards. So yeah.
So what was it
watching
then,
that?
What was the evolution then of that first company that was called where?
It was called Hoosier Captain,
which is
not to be mistaken for Hoosier Captain. We said, don't use a Hoosier Captain, use Hoosier Captain.
Speaking of Indiana.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not too far away. So so that company grew organically for 4 years.
Right.
We sold it to a larger business down at the lake. I got out and decided I was going to get into the IT world. Mm-hmm. And it was really, at the time, really just financial. I heard a bunch of friends were making a ton of money doing IT consulting and and recruiting. And I was a good salesperson. So I was like, I'm going to get into that industry. Well, I really developed a passion for it. Mm-hmm. I developed a passion for the solutions that they were creating, going into Fortune 500 companies, building teams, building great teams, solving major problems. And my passion for solving the problem on the water never died. I, in fact, often missed that world. So I decided after 2 years and my non-compete being up that I was going to build my own team and I was going to start Anchor. And the truth of the matter is I, you know, kind of just started typing up, you know, the problem first. You know, my experience, kind of how we opened this thing up and telling you about my friend. And then I went to Anchor is the Uber for boats, which means ... I had no idea what it meant. And I think that's actually a good thing because we let our customers decide what we were going to be. We came out with an MVP and a kind of a product at first, and we started off as the Uber for water taxi,
right?
Which is great at the Lake of the Ozarks because you need it. And it was really popular, but it doesn't necessarily scale to all waterways. And so we just kind of came up with this concept of let's let the customer tell us. They said, we want to be on the boat longer. So we got into the charter world. So Anchor provides a couple of different services on the water, but it's all revolved around safe boating. If you have a boat, great. We'll provide a captain. If you don't have a boat, we got a boat and a captain for you ready to go. So it was really just kind of the way of thinking there.
So, you know, you took your first crack at it and you had some success. Mm-hmm. I mean, enough that you sold at a place where they're giving you a non-compete, which is usually a sign of a good exit. What lessons or what energy did you take from the first company into the second company?
Sure. So the positive would be definitely do something you're passionate about. And seek to solve a problem. Don't seek opportunity. So if I went into that business thinking like, how can I make money from this right away? Of course, there's got to be a way to make a profit eventually, unless you're a nonprofit. There's nothing wrong with that, but I was there to really truly solve a problem. So, and I was passionate about that problem. So it didn't matter what challenge came my way. I wasn't going to let that stop me. I'd run through a brick wall to solve the problem, right? So I think number one, you got to be super passionate about what you do. On the more negative side, I guess, if you want to call it that, everything's a learning experience, but pick your partners wisely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I had a 50-50 partner in that business. And thankfully, we didn't see eye to eye on how to grow the company and ended up selling the company because of that. Mm-hmm. It was the better decision to do. And that led me to where I am today. So I'm thankful for that, but pick your partner wisely, make sure you have experience working with that person and that your, agreements up front are all just buttoned up and ready to go. It's worth that time.
Sure. Well, I hear you on the agreements, right? Yeah, yeah. That's hugely important, you know, to prepare for that. The whole life of, Hoosier Captain was a few years, right?
Yeah,
so four. If you could go back to, you know, first month you in that company, what aspects of a partner choice would you have informed yourself? I mean, was the stuff you thought you could have known even back at the beginning, or is the stuff that sort of evolved after a couple of years?
So, you know, there was a lot of really positive energy at the beginning and I felt like our goals aligned. So I don't know that I could have told myself anything different other than make sure you go visit a lawyer together, sit on the same side of the table, hand in hand, come up with an agreement, whether it's 50-50, 60-40, whoever's putting it, it really doesn't matter what the relationship is.
Right.
Oftentimes in these companies, you have an operator and then you have the checkbook, right? And I just wanted to, I would want to tell myself back then, go to the lawyer, write up the documents correctly. That way, when it gets down the line and you are successful, that you haven't, you're not going to have a disagreement and have to sell something you're passionate about. And so that's how it kind of unraveled for us, is we just didn't see eye to eye on where to go with it, how to scale it. And we ended up, you know, breaking apart because of it. And it wasn't too long and drawn out. It wasn't too uncomfortable.
Right.
So it's just, you know, I think we could have really taken that, the distance that company would have gotten somewhere quickly, you know.
Interesting. And I noticed, I didn't see on your info that I, you know, when looking into that, there's who's involved now at that level with you and with Anchor.
Yeah. So I'm really the operator, right. And I kind of hinted at the checkbook, right? So I did have an angel investor, who helped fund that first round of technology and discovery, right? Actually helped a lot with the legal, making sure we had a really buttoned up operating agreement, making sure we had all of the compliance stuff. It sounds a little crazy, but we're in a federally regulated industry. Sure. Boat charters are. United States Coast Guard, a division of the military, is dedicated to making sure that commerce on the water is done correctly and through guidelines. So we made sure that we had those boxes checked before, or at least the majority of those boxes before we got started. And I thought that was a really good decision. It was exactly how I wanted to start. Although I'm a creative, so I wanted to go right to the drawing table and start designing the product and designing the service. But it was really good that we did all that because it put us in a position to be successful today.
Cool. So for, you know, just let's give a quick overview of Anchor. So people, sure, can, you know, if they're not familiar with it, can get caught up to that.
Yeah. So Anchor is a website where boat owners, private boat owners, can come to our site and quickly and seamlessly start their new charter business or improve their existing charter business. We work a lot with middle to higher end yacht owners and boat owners, mm-hmm, who recognize that their boat is sitting unused 92% of the time, sometimes less, sometimes more, and that asset can actually be working for them. So we're in the shared economy of boating, just like Airbnb is for your space, Uber is for your car. And we're doing a couple extra steps on the coordination there to keep it safe. Is we have to introduce those boat owners to rostered, licensed U.S. Coast Guard licensed captains who are qualified and know the local waterways. So it's kind of you date it first, then you get married, and then we're off and we're renting great, very fun experiences for, you know, awesome customers, travelers, and of all kinds. So.
You know, I'm assuming you take a percentage of the total spend.
Actually, no.
No, right.
No. So that's what I thought was one of the things broken about an industry.
Okay.
The industry. So if I lock myself into a percentage, then I don't really have much control over the marketplace, or I may price myself out of the market. We wanted to be able to control costs.
Okay.
So Anchor built a really unique backend system that's tailored specifically to this type of charter. Called a bareboat charter.
Okay.
It's a boring term, but it's called a bareboat charter. And basically we have to understand what our costs are going into it. Boat owner A may have different needs than boat owner B, even though they have the same boat.
Right.
So the cost could be different, and Anchor can kind of play with our margin. By doing that,
right,
we're able to be really twice as profitable as the average broker in our industry, which is really what we're working with right now, but eventually I think in the future replacing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we, as much as you want to dig into that, does that mean then that the owners who offer the most attractive rates would be at the top of the list to feed the business to?
Yeah, it's the most attractive rates, not necessarily, but it's really going to be the most sought after experiences. So yeah, there's a rating valuation in there. The size of the boat definitely matters. The year of the boat definitely matters, even the make and model.
Right.
So there's such a wide variance. It's not as cookie cutter as it is when it comes to cars. Toyota Camry is equal to a, you know, Honda Accord.
Right.
Interchangeable. But a 75 foot yacht may not be equal to its 75 foot counterpart.
So, you know, I was going to comment on how many layers. It's like planning six weddings. I mean, I can imagine, you know, between A, having to load balance all the captains and all with their personalities and all the nuances that go into a group of people coming to an event on a boat, to then the owner's concerns, and then having to deal with the marinas and
right,
all the access issues with that, with, you know, I mean, that's...
It can be a logistical nightmare if you, one, don't know what you're doing.
Right.
And two, if you haven't created a system that's specifically built to streamline those processes. So Airbnb has done a pretty good job of taking you through the first I can book, and then I can get the front door to the apartment complex unlocked, and then the key. Yeah. And now I know the Wi-Fi passcode down to the very... We do something similar, but there's a key difference in Anchor versus any competitor, any other boating marketplace that you see out there. And that's that Anchor's a managed marketplace versus a peer-to-peer marketplace. Give you an example. Airbnb, you're messaging the owner directly or their program manager, right? Their property manager. At Anchor, you're always going to work with our internal staff.
Right.
Because we have a deep knowledge of that boat. Plus, how do I say this? The person who owns a $750,000 or $2 million yacht
right.
does not have really the time, patience, or dedication to answer small questions like, well, where are we going to go? You know, do you have swimming gear? Do I have snorkeling gear? You know, there's a lot of questions to answer along the way. Can we go up the intercoastal waterway? They can answer those questions. Of course, it's their boat, but will they really have the time and the responsiveness that you get from an Airbnb lister? So we decided to bring it all in-house, coordinate it, and have a managed marketplace, which really helps us attract the bigger boats. So it's a supply building thing first,
right?
Then a demand. There's already a demand. It's an existing industry. Right. People are chartering. It's just we've modernized and revolutionized the way that they're doing it.
And then how much, you know, how much your growth plans include other revenue streams as far as, you know, you could cater the boat trip or you could, the destination, you could be tied to the destination where they go and
that is a
other
great services. Question. Actually, that's really what we're geared towards. The rental carries a certain margin for Anchor and right. it's absolutely going to be our niche and the base and the core of what we're doing, experiences. But services surrounding the experiences, that's again why we chose to be a managed marketplace.
Right.
From catering to the owner, offering them captain services, yacht management, cleaning services. We're already doing this. And then for the customer, enhancing their experience. The catering's already happening. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have a just, you know, basic beverage and snacks package, we already do that. If you want to have a chef cooking a live steak and lobster, we just did that the other night.
Right.
So it really varies and it's very wide range of services that you can provide. But luckily, it's all on demand and it's at our fingertips today.
Right.
And so we're using a series of, you know, we're borrowing things from, you know, Instacart and learning from them and how they're doing it to really cater it to the marine industry. So that's better margin. Actually, that stuff's better margin and to the customer cheaper than the competition.
Right.
So we can offer it at a better price point, but it's higher margin than the industry average. It's really great.
So now as you move into that space from a, you know, from a customer experience standpoint, you're going to be competing. You're starting to enter the crowded world of travel marketing. And, right. and so how, you know, what's your customer acquisition strategy? How do you compete against the big tour providers? And
sure. First and foremost, it's nice to be able to separate yourself by your inventory. And then that separates your customer. Your price point really determines who your customer is. And our customers are, you know, not looking for the $12 per person type of, you know, public boat tour. Mm-hmm. So we use a digital strategy. Of course, one of my very good friends from college, not only was he there the day I lost my friend, he was there the day I started the first business, was not the business partner, mm-hmm. but he was there during the idea phase. And he's now an equity shareholder in our company here and our chief marketing officer.
Right.
His name's Anthony Haddad. And I know you've met him.
Yep.
He is a whiz in his company, Yummy Marketing, is a whiz at this. So we brought him on as a fractional CMO, said, take the science you're implementing for these agencies and do it directly for us. So we have a really in-house, very strong marketing team. Mm-hmm. And then you have your digital strategy, social, of course, getting the brand and the name out there, but it's really a ground game too. So being local in every market and having at least one representative in the minor markets that can travel, become part of these, you know, we've really connected with Bridget Bellow and the Tampa Bay Business and Wealth groups, mm-hmm. And been part of those. So really ingraining yourself in the community is important. And I think it's going to result in a better service to the owners too.
Sure.
So the owners, the captains, the whole nine yards, understanding your market's important.
So, and then is your growth strategy to find a you know, market champion, a person to, and then build those markets around them?
That's correct. Yeah. So we call that our head captain, really.
Right.
Because that's the most, you know, safety first, right? And so understanding that the boats are safe before we go on them and then assigning captains to them who are trained up on them is part of that dating phase at the beginning. And so it's, yeah, we can have a boat signed up in a week, but really it's going to take another week and a half to kind of commission that boat and make sure it's safe for our guests. So that's really what I think we hope to use as our ability to be recognized and scale, not just nationally, but internationally and globally, is that I feel comfortable because I know Anchor from my backyard,
right,
going to the Mediterranean and chartering with Anchor there, or South Africa, Cape Town, you know, in these exotic places, Australia. I'm familiar with Anchor and I know that they do their diligence on every boat, that when I get on that, it's going to be what I'm being shown. You know, if I see a boat on their website, that's the boat I'm getting.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, that was a picture from a decade ago and now the boat's deteriorating. So that's really, we hope to validate and verify all of our, you know, offerings without owning any assets.
That's great. It still sounds like a lot of logistics.
I
admire you for doing it.
It is. It's a lot of that's, but you have a trained concierge and we're not hiring out of a call center or anything like that. It's a live rep. You know, right now we have our head concierge is local here. She knows the waterways better than I do, as well as some of our captains. She knows things to do. So I really think it's an important aspect of our business that you're getting a live, knowledgeable person who's on a decent, good salary. So we can get really good people in.
Right.
To give you that high-end concierge type service. And then the boat owners who are educated are also communicating with somebody who they like and can get along with. And it's just a relationship-based thing with a technology engine running it.
Yeah, and you know, that's, it's nice, it's refreshing for me personally because when we build here at the community level is very complex and there's a lot of layers that pile on each other, but there's a lot of value in combining those layers. But I do get a lot of, you know, eye rolls and like overwhelm and stuff when you try to lay it all out there and all the different elements of it. And so, but you know, that's a barrier to entry. That's something if you do it and do it right, that it's really difficult for anybody else to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and unlocking that value and bringing those things together, something, if it's not done before, just gives you that little almost mini monopoly blue ocean style there. So that's
another boat reference. There we go.
Blue ocean. Damn, I didn't even mean that one.
It's all right. But you're absolutely right. We're really excited about the strategy and how we're approaching it. And trust me, this isn't day one stuff.
Yeah.
This is mistakes made. How can we fix it? Mistakes made. How can we fix it? One of the biggest things we coach in our organization, and here I'll go with my acronyms, is, you know, PCT versus RSF.
Mm-hmm.
PCT being problem-centric thinking, which is naturally ingrained in our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And then turning that and challenging yourself to turn that problem-centric thinking, which is okay, but challenging yourself within 60 seconds when faced with a problem into RSF is relentless solution focus. So we have a problem here communicating to our boat owners. How do we fix that? They're not checking the website because they're not logging in from everywhere over the world because they're in Portugal or the Med or wherever they are. How can we fix that? And that's how we came to this answer of a managed marketplace is the way to go. It's just as efficient, you know, maybe a little less, but because you have to have a person at the, you know, at the helm.
Yeah.
It really is important to our customer and to our, you know, $3,000 purchase, $2,000 purchase. You don't want to just click.
Yep.
So.
More. Yeah, I hear you. And I love the use of the word relentless. One of my favorite words, capital R. That's a great, great thing to bake into the in the company.
It is.
I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for coming by. I'm going to say officially, since I lucked into one boat reference and you made zero sports references, I'm going to call it a 1-0 shutout.
All right, cool. All right. I did one boat reference for you, but cool. No,
shoot, I made a 1-0 shutout. I made just new sports.
If PCT versus RSF is a Coach Wooden thing, it came from.
So you're going next level on us here.
I was a national team gymnast, so my coach used to just beat it into our heads. And now he's a best-selling sports psychology author and PhD. So it's beat into my head for sure over the years. So,
cool.
It was really great being here. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll keep watching and keep sailing.
You bet. Yeah.
Zach Hatriff from Anchor. With Joe Hamilton in the Catalyst Studio on the Pitch List Startup Report. Find more at stpetecatalyst.com.